Hey guys, this is Ishai Breslauer and welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. On Mondays, we dive deep into an asset class, and on Thursdays, we go into some inspirational stories for the weekend. Can't wait to start. Let's go. This is Ishai Breslauer, the CRE Shark Eye Show, and today we have a special guest, Shaul Greenwald. We're going to talk about title insurance. He has a very fascinating story, and we're going to start right now. Shaul, thank you for being here. I know your time is short. Let's dive right into it. How it all started for you. Let's go.
Hey, thank you, Ishai. How are you doing? Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. It's a pleasure. Let's go.
Good. So Riverside started in 2006, August 2006. Prior to Riverside, I worked for a family business. The family business was around for about 60 years at that point. I was working there about 8 years, manufacturing distribution to Walmart, Target. At some point, I saw that the future didn't look so great for that type of a consumer product, and I decided I had to change course. I was in my 30s at the time. I decided to go to law school. I had four children, one on the way, went to law school. Left the family business and somehow made it through. It wasn't so easy. Then in my third year of law school, I decided to open a title insurance agency in order to, try to make some ends meet. And thank God we were very successful. Started August 06, as I mentioned, and I started myself. I joined up with my partner, Yoel Zegelbaum, in 2009, and we merged together. And since then, at that point, we were five or six people that we started together with at that point when we merged. And now we have about 150 employees between our offices in New York. We have two offices in New Jersey. We have an office in Long Island. And we have actually a large presence in Israel, in Beitar. We have about 50 employees in Beitar. So thank God, it's been very busy. Look, as you mentioned before, we're going to speak a little bit about what happened in the market through COVID and how that affected us. Definitely had an effect on the market and on us, because when the real estate market, things slowed down and transactions weren't happening. It was definitely a little bit of a concern, or more than a little bit of a concern. But we decided to stick with our employees, and we didn't make any changes, or very, very few changes. And we kept moving forward with the hope that things would turn around. And although April, May, and June were difficult months, even July and August a little bit, the end of the year got much better. So people were back out there, doing transactions. The market shifted in the sense that I think whereas New York, we definitely saw a downturn in the New York market, but we perform and we do title insurance across the country. Everywhere else was picking up steam. So a lot of our clients that were based out of New York and New Jersey moved a lot of their acquisitions and other things that they were doing to out of state. We're doing work all over the country, which has been helpful. So thank God we've been busy, but definitely challenging times.
Tell me something, taking a step back a little bit. Meaning some of the people who are listening are more savvy, I would call it. They know what title insurance is. You know, they deal with it many times during the year when they want to get and acquire a property. But for those who are getting into commercial real estate, if you could explain a little bit the importance of title insurance. What is title insurance? The differences between the classic, I would say, real estate of title insurance and the commercial real estate aspect of title insurance between asset classes. Would you go and do that, please?
Sure.
Awesome.
So title insurance is a insurance which is not really, I'm not sure where most of your listeners are, but I'm sure that they're all over the country in the United States as well as internationally. So it's pretty specific to the United States.
Most in the U.S., of course.
Most in the U.S. So pretty specific to the United States, of course, where someone that's buying a property or refinancing a property, there's something called an owner's policy and a lender's policy. And title insurance protects the owner or the lender that they're dealing with the right people and that buying the property or giving a loan against the property to the proper people that own the property, and there are no other intervening liens or judgments or mortgages or any other problems that could pop up on the property. So it protects people from fraud. It protects people from, you know, missing a potential lien or mortgage that was on the property. So we do searches. And if you do your searches right, you really shouldn't have that many claims. But ultimately, you need a good company to make sure that things are done right, number one. And number two, if there is fraud, which is something you can't really find, and something there are certain things that are just impossible to really determine, then you know you could have huge issues, and the title company will ultimately be responsible to pay for your legal fees and potentially pay out a claim if that is what happens. So if there's a tax lien that's missed, or there's a tax payment that's missed, or anything like that, maybe also something that you're going to be covered for. And that's what title insurance really covers you. Now, the owner gets a policy which covers them. The lender gets a policy which covers them because they're giving a loan. They're spending a lot of money and investing almost in that property. The lender is almost like your largest investor in the property. They're also going to want to make sure that they're covered for their title. And, of course, the word title is the ownership of the property. So you're getting insurance that your ownership is in the position that you think it is.
Tell me something. Is there a difference between doing the whole work for title insurance between, let's say, multifamily and a retail or a hotel deal or old age home? Meaning, is there a difference from your end?
Right. So some deals, because of different types of agreements that may be recorded against properties, for example, nursing homes, they're a little more, they're different. And you have to have experience in them. But ultimately, the end result is, you know, it could be a small residential deal or a large transaction. We close small deals. We close residential deals of $50,000 out of state. And then we could be closing a, you know, $100 million or $200 million and $1 billion deal. We've done, you know, transactions up to $1 billion. And all those cases, pretty much the same idea. You're really looking at the property based on records that are found either in the county clerk's office or the city registrar's office in New York or other offices, and you try to determine different issues that may arise on the property, who's the proper ownership that's on the property. So ultimately, it all comes down to the same point and the same ideas, but like we say in our office, no two deals are the same. There are always differences and very slight differences between things. There are things that come up, different types of agreements that you find, which could be interesting, and it keeps it interesting. Every day here is a new day. Something new happening, something interesting happening.
Right.
So it's a fun business. It's a hard business, but it's good because the end result is we get to see transactions happen, and we're happy that our clients are able to get to the closing table and either buy a property or refinance a property, whatever they're trying to do. So we see some of the good things that are happening with their properties, and it's always good to be part of that.
Tell me something. Is there an incident that you recall that was crazy that you could tell us, like something that you found that was like out of it, like a crazy nut story?
Right, so you're not going to find that many crazy things recorded, but you do find that different types of restrictions on properties, that you have covenants, restrictions, all types of different agreements between neighbors that may not allow them to do what they think that they're allowed to do with the property. So someone may want to build a building, and the property says, especially we have some cases where many years ago, up to talk about 75, 100, 200 years ago, you may find a restriction where the property was in an area where the people want to make sure that it wouldn't be used for a horse stable or for other things that would be noxious fumes or other things, because they had other buildings near there. They wanted to protect the area. In those days, there might be people that it was industrial New York City and other areas, and therefore they were trying to protect their neighborhood, which they, so you find very interesting type of agreements between parties. So that's just interesting things that we find. There's a lot of interesting mortgages that we find, private mortgages, other things that are going on that you see some of the history, family issues between family members that you sometimes come across, which definitely add some interest and some spice to it. But there are certain situations where, just because of the nature of the business, you find that, I'll give you a good interesting story. A couple of years ago, we were dealing with a property, actually a client of ours who uses us almost exclusively, and a friend of one of their investors had a 1031 exchange. We handle 1031 exchanges. Our companies, we have Riverside Abstract. We have a company called Riverside 1031, which handles 1031 exchanges, which is a vehicle that if you're selling a property, you're going to have a tax liability, because once you sell a property, if you had a gain, you're going to have to pay capital gains, federal tax, state tax. You're able to defer those taxes by buying another property at the within 180 days. And there's a method of doing that, and we handle all the paperwork, and we make sure that your 1031 exchange is done properly. So that we handle for our clients as well. We also handle what's something called a cost segregation studies, which are also a tax deferral strategy, or actually taking your ability to take depreciation and actually accelerate depreciation. So if someone has a property to buy for $10 million, they have various parts of that property that get depreciation at different times, up to 30 years. And therefore, you might be getting depreciation, but the value is going to be spread out over a long period of time. And what we do is we are able to do a study. We have engineers, and basically based on those engineering reports, we're able to say, okay, in this property, there's a few million dollars of HVAC and other electrical wires, which you could take. And so you're really segregating out the various pieces of the property and saying, okay, these pieces of the property have to be depreciated over time, but there are certain parts of that that could be depreciated over a year or 5 years or whatever it is, and therefore you're able to get your depreciation much quicker. Of course, that saves you taxes and defers your taxes, so you're able to get a quicker depreciation, accelerated depreciation. So those are some of the things we've done. But one of my clients actually had his investor that had all of his 1031 money with a different company, and he was about to close a deal, and he had to use that company for whatever reason. It was a little complicated. The day of the closing, which was the 180th day of the 1031 exchange, there was a major issue on the property that there was a lawsuit that was filed, and because of that, the other title company wasn't going to close the deal, because you know you don't want to have a lawsuit on the property when you're closing a deal, and it was a big issue because you know if they didn't close the deal on the 180th day, the client or the investor would have had a potential. In that case, we're talking about he would have had to pay $3 million in taxes, which if he was able to close on day 180, he'd be able to actually defer those taxes and push them to the future. So he calls me desperate. It was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I have to close by 5 o'clock. What can you do? So I said, send me all the information. I looked at it and I said, based on what you're showing me, all these different points that you're showing me, I think I have a way to close it. I'll figure it out. Give me a couple of hours. And by 5 o'clock, we actually closed the deal. So we were able to close the deal in 3 hours. It was really crazy how we did it and how we got underwriters to approve it. But a lot of it was because of our strength in the market and the clout that we have in the market with the underwriters and the integrity we have. So we're able to get certain things done. So it was was stressful, but at the same time, it's always fun and it gives you a sense of purpose to be able to really help someone. You really know you really made a big difference in someone's life that you were able to save them that type of money.
It's amazing. And that comes obviously with experience and years and all that stuff. You started speaking about this before. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, life was basically normal, right? Prior to 2020. And then COVID hit. How do you guys feel? Because you're in the front end of acquisitions, meaning people do acquisitions, they come to you, and you're becoming a very, I would say, active partner in this whole process. So what do you feel from everything that goes on the second, you know, March hit and this whole crazy thing coming our way?
Right. So it was interesting because last year, January and February, and even March, funny enough, deals were on the road and still on the path to closing. I think even in March, we were closing enough deals that things were running and things were smooth. Our time that we really had a slowdown was April, May, June, as I mentioned, and even July a little bit. And I think April and May, because it was during the holiday season, during Pesach and other things. So, and Passover was during that period of time. So it was a little bit of a good break in some sense that, you know, we were able to pull our foot off the pedal. And we had our staff was working remotely. We're an essential business, so we didn't really have to work remotely, but ultimately we felt for the security and safety of our people and our employees, our team members, that we started working remotely. But so we were working remotely from March, some point in March. April. And then we actually started coming back to the business. May 15th, we actually brought back our staff one day a week, and we practiced social distancing. And then we started June 1st, we had 2 days a week. And finally, June 15th, we're actually fully back in the office. So we've been back in the office since June 15th. We find that our clients are finding opportunities in various ways. It's not standard. I think that people are really out there. And like anything else, if you're going to sit in your house and you're going to, which is difficult, and people have to do it, based on regulations and other areas we have to do it. But a lot of our clients are finding ways to make deals happen, and they're traveling out there, and they're working hard, and they're hustling. So it's not we don't really get the deals done. It's not us that are finding the deals, but our clients seemingly are. They're young, they're aggressive, they're still out there looking for deals, and they're trying to make deals happen. And I think they're finding, especially during the period of COVID, they were able to find good deals, and people wanted to get out of deals or whatever else was happening, so they're able to get deals done. And definitely not the same. It's definitely a little bit more difficult to find deals, but I think that if you're out there and you push. And you build the right relationships. End result is, COVID affected the interpersonal relationships in the sense that you can't really meet people in the same sense. And even Zoom, it's wonderful, but there's something missing about the human interaction.
Of course.
So I think that that's affected things. But the end game is that the people that want to get out there and hustle, I think that there's a lot of deals to be had still.
Hey guys, before we continue, I would like to introduce you to the 7-Day CRE Challenge, which will introduce you to commercial real estate and will show you that anyone can do this. Also, I have the free cheat sheet for commercial real estate with the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. You can download it free. Just click below or above, wherever it is, and get it. Let's continue. Tell me something. From the trends that you see, the types of deals that you see, Where is the market going? Meaning, you've seen the change, you've seen these types of deal that come to your desk. Where's the market, in your opinion? Obviously, nobody has a crystal ball, but what do you think?
Yeah, look, warehouse industrial strong. I think people are looking at warehouse industrial. Multifamily is still strong, even though that you have rent questions and COVID reserves are the RA.
Forbearances, yes.
Are terms that we never heard before. We never heard the word COVID reserve. It reminds me of 2008 and 9, where we started hearing the word short sale. And the first time I heard the word short sale, I was wondering what is that? I never heard the term before. I'm going back a little while, and that became part of our lexicon and part of our standard vocabulary. And now COVID reserve became part of our vocabulary. So you have to always look at the history and see that the world so far has not ended. And even though it was scary and at times people were I think if you go back to March, April, and May, really there was some fear and no one really knew where this was going to end up. But I think as we get to brighter days and we're seeing that things have calmed down, gotten back into a certain pace, and everyone's going to figure out how to make transactions happen. So the banks figured out this concept called the COVID reserve to help them get multifamily deals done or other deals done with COVID reserve. And we're finding, though, that our New York market, for sure, we deal with residential and commercial. So when I talk about residential, I mean 1 to 3 families. And a commercial, when I talk about commercial, I can mean multifamily, I can mean anything. But it's we deal with all types of properties, from small to big. And we're finding in New York State, for example, definitely New York City, our New York City business, commercial-wise, as far as multifamily and other deals that we were doing, even refinances, are very, very slow, much, much different than it was prior to COVID. But our out-of-state business has really picked up tremendously. And whereas our refinance market of residential refinances, which is, small deals, but, we have a huge uptick in New York because, and across the country, because the interest rates are historical lows. So there are a lot of, because
Right.
interest rates are historical lows, you're able to get certain deals done that maybe you weren't able to get done before, both on the residential side and the commercial side. So there's some benefits.
Tell me something. You guys are really licensed, in 30 plus, if I recall, right? 30 plus states.
We actually run and do title insurance all over the country. So there's licensing requirements, and we're licensed in 35 out of 50 states. In about 15 states, we perform title insurance, but we work together with our underwriters because there are different licensing requirements over there. So most title companies just say they're national. We just say what it is. So with 35 states, we have licenses, and the other 15 we do business with. But so I've closed deals in every state in the country, bar none. So Alaska, we've closed deals. You know, we've really closed deals in every single state in the country, which is pretty interesting.
That's amazing. Tell me something on a, from a marketing point of view. How do you guys get to all these clients all over the place? Because they are New York locals, because they, how do you get them? How do you get to them? How do they get to you? That's an interesting thing.
Very good question. So marketing is it's hard work. It's really hard work.
Yes, it is.
It's not something that comes just, you know, by just hoping that, you know, I tell all my salespeople, I say to them, the worst thing you could do is to be in the office. You know, you have to be in the office every once in a while. It's, you know, it's good, it's healthy. You get in, you could, you know, you could focus on what you need to do and plan better, but then you have to be out. Business happens by being out, speaking to people. We used to have a lot of events. Now the events have slowed down, but we still, we have a company called Riverside Experience, which is one of our marketing arms. And basically Riverside Experience is a knowledge and networking company that we have courses all the time that people can sign up for, and you're able to get some more knowledge about what you're doing and network, because if you get onto these Zoom calls, even now, even though you're not within a within a group setting and you're not in a personalized setting, but by being on a Zoom call, you get to know who the players are in the industry, who's interested in that market, and there's been a lot of follow-up. We help people all the time to get introduced to other people. So our marketing is really, I always tell people that my job as a title insurance agent, you know, there are a lot of title insurance agencies and companies, and to, you know, to be like everyone else is easy, just to perform title insurance work. That's not really what's gonna bring in business. What brings in business is by being a little bit different and thinking different and being a resource for your clients. So I like to think of myself as a resource for our clients. I always tell our clients, I'm looking for them to make a lot of money, and I hope that they let me make some money while they're riding that as well. So I'm trying to help them, you know, with anything I can, finding them equity, find them some lender, find them partners, you know, making some shidduch between different people that I know in different various areas that they're doing deals, and I try to put them together, which adds value. So if I add value to them, you know, we'll grow. And I really look at it as a value proposition. I'm looking to create value for my clients.
So let me just remind you, meaning, do you remember how we met? I'll remind you how we met.
Okay, good. Let's hear the story.
Remind
good
you how we met. Version. And that is due to what you said now, to the thanks to all those events. That was a while ago. That was, I say, meaning I was not even in commercial real estate yet. I was getting into real estate because,
yes.
And we're going to get to your story in a second.
We're property together in Israel, right?
Exactly. And that was over 10 years ago. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, about 10 years. Right. Amazing.
I know because my kids were small and now they're all big.
I'm in the same boat. We're both growing
exactly.
up.
Exactly. So I'll tell you where it was, and I have a question to follow that. It was in an APAC event, actually. And I was registered in APAC at the time and went to an event, and all of a sudden I heard that there's APAC is making an event together with the company called Riverside. Okay. Obviously, you are guys already active and you are out there, but not as big as you guys are today. And you came in. I remember I was asking you and your guys, what do you guys do? You said title insurance. Okay, cool. Very nice. And said, what brought you together with APAC? I said, well, we want to come out. We want everybody to know us and et cetera. And we brought incredible food. That's what you guys, I don't remember who told me that, but either one of your guys or yourself or your partner. Anyways, and it was unbelievable food. Amount of meat was ridiculous over there. And since then, of course, we had a relationship, and I've been to several events of yours guys, and obviously grew and became bigger. And the thing is, you know what, when COVID hit, this whole thing of events, and you said it yourself, it changed tremendously, meaning everything changed, right? So your salespeople who are supposed to be literally out there can't really be out there anymore, meaning for a while. Right now they can a little bit, somewhat, so on. Well, what do they do now? What is your marketing strategy now? And that will give a good idea for other people who have businesses who came out and having events and being out there with events, and now they don't have those events or have a much less events. What do they do now with the virtual world? How did you guys pivot?
Interesting. So I don't know if it's called pivoting or focus. I would tell you, you know, there's a story I like telling over that there was a county fair, and there was a contest at the fair where they had two lumberjacks that were going to spend an hour chopping down trees. At the end of the hour, they're going to see who chopped down more wood. So they start the two very strong lumberjacks. They get up there with their axe, and they start chopping down the trees. The first guy's chopping and chopping and chopping. The second guy's working. They're sweating. And about 10 minutes in, John goes and he walks into his shed, and he takes a break for 5 minutes, and then he comes back out. He starts chopping again, and the other guy is chopping the entire time, full force, really strong guy. He's not taking any breaks. Nothing's happening. And every 10 minutes, the other guy goes in and takes his break and going into the shed. And at the end of the contest, they look at it and they realize that John, you know, beat his competitor by, you know, handily and really beat him. So he said, how is it possible? Every 10 minutes, you took a 5-minute break. He said, no, you don't realize. You thought I was taking a break. I was sharpening my axe. So I think that I tell this to my salespeople also, that there are times in life that you can't always go full force. There are times that you either for whatever reasons yourself, you need a break, or because the world stops. And right now we're at a point where the world stopped a little bit. I think we have to sharpen our axe. We have to think about how do we bring more value to our clients and keep in touch with your current clients, and even more by calling them. Current clients, it's not as important to meet them on a daily basis or weekly or monthly basis. Your current clients is really about keeping contact with them. And sometimes people forget about that. People forget about their current clients, and they think that it's all about growth. It's sometimes just about retaining and retention of your current clients and trying to find other ways that you can work together. You might have a client that might not be giving you all their business, and pick up the phone and say to them, hey, I need more business. I need your help. And how can we work better together? So there are ways that you can still work without being out of office. Be smart about it. Try to figure out other ways that you could market to each other. COVID's a good opportunity to, you know, get out there and think about your business. Sometimes you just need that break and pull back a little bit. Think, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? And how do we improve?
So tell me something. I want to shift gears a little bit. We started with your story, but we went to a little too fast. And this story is really cool because you were over 30 years old with little kids at home, and you wanted to change everything and to go start a company, okay? And to go into the title insurance business. How is that happening? Meaning, I know it from firsthand because I also shifted careers. I was a teacher until I was 36, and then I shifted careers to real estate. So tell us a little bit about it, how it was, how difficult it was, what type of decisions you had to make on the personal level, on a company level, everything.
Right. So I think they say when you have a magician doing a dangerous trick, they say, don't try this at home. So I would don't necessarily try this at home. It doesn't always work.
Let me add to that. I just saw someone posting something in one of the social medias, meaning it just came to me. And the guy said, any words of encouragement for entrepreneurs? And Elon Musk came out with this little thing. And he said, if you need words of encouragement, just don't do it.
Right. It's a good, very good, right. I think that's the answer. That the answer is that I was working for a family business and I was comfortable. I was doing very well. I had a nice salary. I had, my my cars. I had insurance. I built a house in Muncie, New York. I was living in Rockland County for about 4 years. And I, some reason, my heart and my body was telling me it's not for me. I need to move on. I don't see a future. I was nervous about the future. I didn't really have a plan. All I knew was I wasn't happy with what I was doing. And I decided to try it. And I took the LSATs. I did well. I got a scholarship to Cardozo Law School. I went to Cardozo. And I worked through 1 year of law school. Then the next 2 years of law school, I had to leave my family business. I didn't have any support. And I sold my house in Muncie. I moved into my mother-in-law's house, actually back to Brooklyn. So we made some really tough decisions, monetarily, financially, family-wise. It was a really big shift, a big paradigm shift, but it was something that we did, and really my wife was behind it, even though she knew that wasn't going to be easy, and she knew that I didn't really have a good plan, but she trusted that somehow we're going to figure it out, and that really was important to me, that she was able to stand behind me being a little bit crazy. But I think that sometimes, like you said, sometimes you don't have an answer how it's going to work. It's just jumping into something and really working hard. So, you know, I worked hard. I can tell you that while I was in law school and starting a business, I would work 18-hour days all the time. It wasn't like, you know, pretty much it wasn't even a question of Monday to Friday. It was Saturday night. I was never home Saturday night. I was never home Sunday. I was never home at night. I worked pretty much 24/6 for many years.
So basically, what you're saying, hustling is a part of it, and that's the way it is. Can't do anything.
Yeah. There's nothing that you could really explain to someone and say, hey, you know, just jump into business. If you have the stamina for it and you're going to want to work hard, look, it's not easy. People, when I started, people were telling me, why are you crazy in doing this? You should, you know, there's so much competition. It's going to be hard. How are you going to compete with the guys who are out there already? And you have to be able to be, I don't know if it's being crazy, but it's also being a little bit not listening to the static and not listening to what people say. You have to be able to have your own mind and your own vision and have something in front of you and have a goal and say, hey, I want to be somewhere and I want to do something and then go for it. And now it's not going to be easy. There's no tricks to it. And it's like, and you have a lot of things that happen that sometimes you think of yourself, maybe I shouldn't have done this. And, you know, that happens. It's, you know, and you're not even sure while you're doing it if you're doing the right thing. But I think that if you really put your mind to it and anything you're going to do and you work harder than someone else, I think that's the difference between the people that make it, you know, and a lot of what we call siyata dishmaya, God helping us along the way and knowing that that's where, that it's not all in your hands. You have to rely that there's a greater world out there and there's something greater that's helping you. But if you do your thing and you work really hard at it, like anything else, if you, you know, whatever you're doing, if you're studying, if you want to play ball, you know, I think you're going to talk to a guy like Michael Jordan and find out how he did it. He's going to say the same thing. He's a talented guy, but ultimately he worked harder than everyone else in the building. So if you read some of the stuff about Michael Jordan, about others that have made it, you're going to find they really, really worked hard. It doesn't come overnight. It doesn't, and there's no free money. It doesn't come just by just saying, hey, I want to do something. It's really hard work. It's real hard work.
Right. To stick to it, that's the key. And tell me something. When was the point, because you start, okay, you're a small company and you start this whole thing, and then there's the time where you have to grow, right? Because to become from a company with just few people who work there, to get to be where you guys are now, when was that shift that you said, okay, we have to now go from here to there? When was that? Can you tell us a little bit about that point?
I think there are two parts to it. The first part is that I think that the hardest part of it actually was the first part of the first part of the journey was the hardest part, where you're starting a company. I was myself. I was doing everything, starting from figuring out what software to use, computers, phones. But there's a point where you see, and I got a good piece of advice, that if you find that you're doing work, and you know you can't do this right away, but slowly, if you find that you're focusing on work that you shouldn't be doing because your time is more valuable than that. So for example, order entry in my company, right? It's a very important part of what we do, and we have good people that do it. but it's not necessarily worth my time to go and place an order, put it into our software system. It's data entry. So if you see that you're focused on that, at the beginning you have to do what you got to do, and I did everything. But at some point you can't do everything, and you have to start hiring. Now, hiring is very hard because when you hire someone, you take on a responsibility, and you think about it in terms of, okay, that means until now I'm doing X amount of deals. If I hire this person, I have to do, I have to plus that by 20 more deals a year or whatever number is in order to pay for that person, even without making profits, right? It's just a question of how much you're gonna have to grow, and it's scary. So I think my first, I would say 9, 10 employees that we hired, that was one of the hardest to hire, because every single time I was thinking about the same thing. How am I gonna do it? How am I gonna be able to support them? Is the company gonna continue? It was almost a miracle every day I opened the lights and found that we still had deals coming in. So that was pretty hard. It got to a certain point, and once you got past that, then it actually got easier to hire. I was hiring much quicker without thinking and just saying, okay, whatever, we're gonna figure it out, it's gonna work. Just jumping in. So definitely hard to do, but I think the beginning is really, really hard. And the second thing is that the same way that we spoke about, really, that if you're gonna go into any business, you have to have that personality of being a little bit of a risk taker. So I think that goes in with hiring as well, that when you're gonna hire, you're taking a risk, and you're not sure if that person's gonna be great, they're not gonna be good. You hope they're gonna be good, but there's a risk in who you're hiring, and you hope that you're hiring well. And then there's a risk that, maybe your business doesn't grow enough, or maybe you're not gonna need all those people. And I think the worst thing, if anyone ever asked me what the worst thing that we have to do in our business is, not the days that we don't have business. COVID was not, you have a little less business, fine, hopefully you have enough money. That's not the hard part, which is, always tough figuring that out, your financial part of things. But I think the hardest part is if you have to lay someone off and let someone go. That's really, really the hardest part of our business. Really, really. I can't even tell you, it's not even close in my mind, the difficulty of making a decision to lay someone off, and very rare that we have done it. So it's very, really the most difficult thing we could do.
Yes, it's definitely something when you have other people's lives, with you. It's a tough decision to make. Shaul, really, I want to thank you for your time. It was really
Thank you.
interesting. And
Good.
Obviously we have a lot to talk about, meaning always, but we got to go now, and you have to go, and you have a lot of things to do. So I really
Yeah.
appreciate your time. And stick around for a second. I'm just going to wrap up the show, and we'll talk just 2 more minutes, and then we'll go. All right. So thank you guys for listening. Really, the CRE SharkEye show. You're going to see it if you're hearing it in the podcast, make sure you see all the links in order to be able to reach out to Riverside Abstract to see how to reach Shaul's company. If you're seeing it on YouTube, if you're seeing it on LinkedIn, if you're seeing it on Facebook, look at the links. You can reach out to them in any of those links. And you guys, we're going to see each other on Thursdays. Take care. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE SharkEye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.